All right, let me tell you a little bit about David Icke, and it is Icke, not Icky. He's billed as the most controversial and challenging man in Britain. He speaks openly about issues that others fear discussing. He exposes the lies and deceit of thousands of years and reveals the biggest secret, how humanity has been controlled and manipulated since prehistory by extraterrestrial gods, small g, and the secret society network they created and continue to orchestrate today. In this profusely illustrated presentation, he exposes an astonishing web of interconnected manipulation to reveal that the same few people, secret societies, organizations control the daily direction of our lives. They engineer wars, terrorist outrages, political assassinations, control the world market in hard drugs, the media indoctrination machine. He reveals how religions, politics, banking, and business have been designed from the beginning to control and suppress human potential in pursuit of long-term agendas. The mental, emotional, and spiritual enslavement of the human race. He shows how spiritual and scientific knowledge has been hoarded in the hands of the few since ancient times while being systematically withdrawn from public circulation. Oh my, that's quite an introduction. Here is David Icke. David, welcome.
Thank you. Well, yeah, that should fill a nice 3 hours, shouldn't it, really?
It certainly will. David, your last name is spelled I-C-K-E, and in the last couple of weeks since I've been sort of mentioning that you're going to be around, I've heard other people say Icky, and I fell into the same rut and said Icky. Nobody would pronounce their name Icky. But when you were a child, David, based on how it's spelled here, did you have a rough time with this one?
No. They called me Icke.
They called you Icke?
Yeah. I mean, you don't pronounce the C. Actually, funny enough, I had a friend, you know, his name was Bill Shufflebottom, and I said to him once, "Have you ever thought of changing your name?" He said, "Yeah." I said, I was going to call myself Charlie Shufflebottom at one time, he said, but I never got around to it, you know. So, what's in a name and all that?
Well, children in Britain are obviously much more kind-hearted, not so mean-spirited
they're just the same. They're the same the world over.
Are they?
You know.
So they never called you Icky?
Not that I recall.
All right. Anyway, I just sort of read a broad outline of the incredible road we're about to go down.
Uh-huh.
How did you come to all of this, I think, would be the proper first question.
Well, it's like everything. It's a journey. I started out life as a professional soccer player in England when I left school back in the late 60s.
A professional
soccer player, yeah. I was a goalkeeper. Yeah, they used to call me Cinderella because I kept missing the ball, you know. But
no kidding. I actually came to love soccer. I went to France during Coupe du Monde, and I had never been exposed to soccer, and I saw the English game playing Argentina, it was astounding. I sat in my hotel room in Paris and I watched that, and I became a soccer fan. Boom.
Yeah, well, I was doing that, back in the 60s, but arthritis finished my career when I was 21 and became a journalist and worked for newspapers and radio and eventually became a frontline television link man with the BBC. And towards the end of the 80s, however, in fact, earlier than that, I started looking at the world and what was going on and didn't like what I saw. And towards the end of the 80s, more in the very early 90s, I went through what you might call, a spiritual awakening. It was more like an explosion. Not religious, by the way. God save us from religion. A spiritual awakening. When I started to realize that there was far more to life and the human entity and who we were and the power that we had than ever we were told, because we're given this choice, basically, between a judgmental God and you listen to this guy in a long frock, he'll tell you what God wants, and so listen to me and you'll be fine.
Mm.
And on the other side, what we laughingly call science, which basically says this world is all there is, and it's all we're all a cosmic accident. And it's quite a choice to make, you know. Am I subject to some judgmental God, or am I a cosmic accident? And I started to realize that there was far more evidence available that was being suppressed in the public arena. And so I started on this journey of uncovering this suppression, and it was a trickle to start with. And as the 90s have unfolded, I've been in over 20 countries in the last 18 months talking and researching, because if you're doing this job, you've got to listen as much as you talk, or you don't pick up the evidence and the information that's available. And the suppression of what you might call spiritual information became the suppression of political information, the suppression of how a very few people control this world through a series of interconnecting pyramids in which most people in those pyramids haven't got a clue what's going on. You know, people say it's the Freemasons. Well, you know, I've got a lot of friends who are Freemasons, and they are completely in the dark about what's going on. It's not the Freemasons. It's not the Jews. It's not the anyone. It's an organization that works through all of these apparently uncontrolled areas of life and manipulates to a particular and very long-term agenda, a great point in which we're now facing as this 20th century comes to a close. And it's an organization within all organizations, not the Freemasons or whatever. They work through all these different organizations. And so it's been a journey, and getting the information now is no longer a problem. It's a tidal wave, because once you put your head above the trench with this, you attract people in with information who don't know what to do with it or are frightened to put it out themselves. The challenge I have is not gathering information, it's fitting the picture together and seeing how the pieces fit together and how that affects what's coming up now across the millennium, because this is a particular time when a lot of cards are going to be played to put the human race into a position of even greater mental and emotional imprisonment than we've been thus far.
At the beginning of all this, you suggest, right at the beginning of what I read, that humanity has been controlled and manipulated since prehistory by extraterrestrial gods and the secret society network they created and continue to orchestrate. What proof do you have of that, or what convinced you might be a better question?
Well, to see the scale of the evidence, people have to read the books that I write, which are lengthy and detailed, and this particular one's coming out, The Biggest Secret, in the new year, in February. Because what I do is I take vast amounts of information from different sources, and I look for the key common themes. I look for the cross-references. I look for the common things that keep coming up that push you in a certain direction. I don't follow a belief system. I follow information. I let the information be my guide to where I go, not preconceived ideas. And when you fit the information together from vast numbers of sources, mm-hmm. You can pick up in the ancient world basically the kind of areas where Zachariah Sitchin talks about, and others too, not just him, about this Anunnaki and the hybrid race that was created, this Anunnaki stroke human hybrid race. And then you look at the Book of Enoch, which is just a version of a much older book, the Book of Noah. And it talks there about the watchers and how the watchers, which for me and many others, when they read it, are clearly an advanced race of probably not of this world who were around at that time. And that talks, too, about how the watchers interbred with humanity. You look at other ancient texts, it actually describes the birth of these hybrid children in very common terms, common theme terms, them being very white with white hair and with shining eyes, as one said, eyes that shine like the sun. And this hybrid race, lots of people increasingly, and I'm sure, I've no doubt, people have talked about this, who've specialized in this particular area on your program. The question is, what happened Because what you get with most of this research is it kind of stops, and that's the end of it. What I've done is, well, what happens here? What happened to these people? And what's fascinating is that you can pick up a white race, an Aryan race, in that very kind of area that these Sumerian texts and other ancient texts talk about. And I'm talking about the mountains of Kurdistan, of Iran, of the Caucasus Mountains area of what we now call Turkey. And it's interesting that the word for white people that Americans have is Caucasian. The Caucasian after mountains in the Near East. And then you can pick this this race up. You can see how it came down into the plains of Sumer, down into Babylon, which was a major, major place in the journey through history of these bloodlines that I talk about that run the world to this day. They also moved into Egypt. And then you can follow, as the centuries unfolded, this same white race across land, and they changed their names from various times. They were the Sumerians, they were the Scythians. But if you follow them across the land into what we now call Western Europe, into France, into what we call Belgium, Holland, into Germany, they changed their names as the centuries unfolded, but you can follow the flow of people and you can see that actually it's the same people. So out of this Middle East area where these this interbreeding went on came the white races that peopled Europe. There's also some tremendous research I've come across and documented in this next book that shows that a group of people, a race of people called the Phoenicians, went by sea from this same Middle East, Near East area to Britain. 3000 BC, there are standing stones in Britain that confirm this as well as other things. And when you look at the British culture, which became the Western culture, it was actually the Phoenician culture. The two deities that the Phoenicians worshipped were Barat and Barati. And Barat and Barati became Baritan and Baritania. When you look at the way the ancient Phoenicians depicted their goddess Barati, it was precisely the way the British depict their goddess Britannia. Then you look at even conventional history of how the Hindu religion was created and how the advanced civilization in the Indus Valley was created. And it was created by an Aryan race coming out of the Caucasus Mountains area and taking the Sanskrit language, which we now believe was originally Indian, but actually came with this same group. They also took in the stories that became the ancient Vedas. And so you can see that this white race, which very demonstrably has taken over the world en masse, but there are key bloodlines manipulating it that people don't realize, actually came out of this area where this hybrid extraterrestrial stroke human, these bloodlines were created, and peopled Europe. Now, when you do the research, you find that the genealogical research, you find that key bloodlines became the kings and the divine right of kings, again, by bloodline, of the these countries like Iran and that area and Egypt. And then you can also see that the aristocracy and royal families of Europe, which is actually the royal family of Europe when you look at it, it's one tribe, not actually a number of families. They became the aristocracy and they became the royal families of Europe. Now, through the great so-called British Empire, which we can get into later because it's fundamental to how these bloodlines were transported around the world, these bloodlines went to the Americas. They went to Australia, to Africa, to Asia, to New Zealand. They went all over the world through the British and European expansion known as the empires. And then you do the research of the people that have run America since 1776. And it's astonishing. We've had 42 presidents so far of the United States. 33 of those 42 are genetically related to England's King Alfred the Great and Charlemagne, the great monarch of France. 19 are genetically related to England's King Edward III, who has thousands of blood connections to Prince Charles. And a stunning statistic from Burke's Peerage, which is the aristocratic genealogical Bible based in Britain, which is that since the first presidential election in America in, 1789, George Washington, the winner at every election has been the candidate with the most British and European royal genes. You look at Bill Clinton.
He's from the state of Arkansas. David.
Clinton is genetically related to the House of Windsor, the present royal family. He's genetically related to every Scottish monarch.
David.
To England's King Henry III and to Robert I of France.
David, one could imagine this genealogy having connections in the early presidents. No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
But as late as Bill Clinton...
As late as Bill Clinton. I mean, you know, I'm not plucking this out of the air. This has come from Burke's Peerage, the Bible of aristocratic genealogy on the planet.
All right, hold on, David. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. One can imagine the early connection, but today, this is Coast to Coast AM.